morning, Vietnam. This edition of Andy and Art Debunked going out to our Vietnamese listeners. An unknown number of you. I don't know how many.
We don't know
how many downloads we get in Vietnam, but this is for you. Because we're talking about today a quintessential Vietnamese topic. But before we get into it, I have to make some introductions. I am, of course, Andy, of the titular Andy of Andy and Art Debunked. And with me is the other titular of Andy and Art Debunked, Art.
Whoa, 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 bunk funkers. How do you do today?
Great. Thank you, Art.
Happy to be here, Andy.
Yabba dabba doo. I like talking to you. Hey, Art. Hey, Art. Are you familiar with makeup?
Let me think. Makeup.
Cosmetics?
Cosmetics! Yes, Ulta Beauty products.
What's the number one rule of makeup? Doing your makeup?
You gotta take it off before you go to sleep.
Well,
otherwise it gets all crusty.
Start with a good foundation.
Oh my God, Andy, of course. You start with a good foundation.
You gotta
need to match your skin tone.
Right.
And then cover up all those disgusting blemishes.
That's right. You've got to have something good to build on.
Then you put on all the mascara and you go, "Is baby pretty now, mommy? Baby pretty now, mommy?"
And then you throw your sister down the stairs.
Oh, baby pretty now.
Push her out of her wheelchair.
Jesus Christ. Is it the Untouchables? That's a baby carriage. Is that a movie you've seen? Is that one of the five?
Yeah, no. I didn't see this movie.
No.
what was that movie well, I don't remember the name of the movie.
The movie's not important, Bunk.
Anyway.
What's important is, are you doing your makeup right now?
Are you doing your makeup right now? Because, stop. That's the.
That sound of that cock crowing.
Should alert you. That's what my brakes sound like in my car. I get 400 chicken power. The point is, start with a good foundation.
That's right.
That's also the number one rule of home building.
Oh my goodness, Andy. Wow, was that a segue?
That's a segue. That's what's known in the biz bunkfunkers as a segue. It's where we transition from nonsensical bullshit into the topic at hand. Bunkfunkers, today we're talking all about
Tim Allen.
Tim Allen, famous home builder from Home Improvement.
That's right.
You may remember this show from the early 90s. It aired exclusively on Detroit cable TV, but everybody saw it through syndicated TV where cameras followed Tim Taylor around.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Andy, but there was actually a, it's been lost forever on the cutting room floor, but there was a deleted episode of Home Improvement where you were the tool time girl.
It was me in a bikini and I just did that constantly. Yeah. They described it as too bad to air and more offensive than if they had just filled the episode with racial slurs.
That's
even
right.
Though I didn't say anything other than but I stepped on everybody's lines, you know, every time Tim tried to talk, I would just go, even if I wasn't in the scene, I would be off camera going,
That's right. And well, there's one pivotal scene where Wilson kind of has his hands and he's looking over the thing and then he's talking to Tim and then suddenly you appear.
Right.
And you go, but then you kind of fall off the apple crates that you were standing on. You fall and you go,
And you know what's really interesting? You know, when you work on a TV show, you get to meet the people behind the scenes.
That's right.
And that Wilson guy, he was actually a real bastard.
He was a real bastard?
A real bastard, yeah.
He got into a lot of fights with Jonathan Taylor Thomas, too.
Yeah, well, only one of us could be a teen heartthrob.
It was definitely going to be a 40-year-old man like yourself.
40-year-old at the time, 40 years old, overweight. Obese, early stages of heart disease. I was constantly wheezing, sweating profusely under the lights.
I thought you looked great.
Yeah, I did look
great. There's no better look for you than a bright pink bikini and construction boots.
Yeah, and a big auger that you might use to, like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Aug,
anything.
Augment stuff.
So, yeah, JTT and I had a little bit of a beef.
That's right.
And, yes, I did get arrested after putting him in a headlock.
I'm sad that that'll never air. Yeah. I feel fortunate that I got to see it.
Yeah, it's too bad. But you know what?
Home building.
It lives on in the archives. If you go to Detroit's number one cable TV station, KDET, you can check it out. It's still there.
Yeah, don't go to KDEET.
Deet. Yeah.
Deet. Don't go to KDEET.
KDEET.
Because you're not allowed to use that anymore.
Yeah, that's...
this stuff will kill the deers.
Yeah.
Whatever DEET did.
Yeah.
What did DEET do?
That channel's still allowed in...
What did DEET do?
What did DEET do? I don't know.
What did DEET do?
What did DEET... What did he do? I think...
It's like R2-D2.
I think that...
What did DEET do, R2-D2?
DEET was like, what, an insect repellent, right?
Yeah. That's me asking R2-D2, I think it's actually
okay, right?
What?
Isn't DEET okay?
What did DEET do?
I don't know. We don't know, and we don't give a shit. It's not worth...
Bugbuggers, let us know. What did DEET do? What did DEET do, R2-D2?
Bugbuggers, if you know what DEET did, let us know. Tweet at us using the hashtag, what did he do?
That's so stupid. Oh, what did God. He do? What did he do?
Anyway, home building. So... Bungfunkers, pull out your Binfords.
Pull out your Binfords, Bungfunkers. Get those designs out.
Whip out your Binfords. Get them humming. Your power drills. Get really ready to drill.
Carpentry.
We're talking about architecture today.
Yeah, baby.
We're talking about the most famous architect in the history of the earth.
The Mozart of architect. I mean, is that fair to say? I think so.
Wow, I don't know.
Maybe.
I don't know anything about architecture. I'll be honest with you.
I don't either.
I don't know.
But I have some opinions on it.
Wow. I can't wait to hear them. today we're talking about... Wait, you want to share them right now?
No.
Or will it spoil
No. Let's share it at the halfway point.
Okay. We'll take a break halfway.
In between where the topic turns.
Yeah. So we're talking today about Frank Lloyd Wright.
Frank Lloyd Wright.
You might have heard of him.
And here's the thing, Andy. Don't get Frank Lloyd Wright confused with... You know, his brother, who sells a very refreshing soft drink, Frank Lloyd Sprite.
Yeah. And, yeah, it's weird that they are brothers, but have different names.
It's true. And, you know, you don't want to get him confused with his other brother, who might bite you in the middle of in your sleep.
Mm-hmm.
That's Frank Lloyd Might.
Yeah.
And he's definitely not to be confused with their other brother, estranged, right. Who, you know, you might go frolicking and enjoying some leisure activities. That's Frank Lloyd Kite.
And, but, you know, the family is descended from a proud lineage.
That's right. That's true.
They are... You know, in their past, in the history of the family, there was, of course, you know, generations ago,
mm-hmm.
A famous crusader.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Frank Lloyd Knight. I don't know why I made him a crusader. Really, really religiously intolerant.
Yes.
Famous thread in the family.
Right. That's right.
This guy, big time Muslim.
Yeah, big time. Wait, what?
Oh, wait, no, wait.
Oh, wait a minute.
Not a jihad.
So a defender of Damascus, or he's trying to take it back.
Yeah, he was the sultan of...
And then, of course, there's the rest of the family. Frank Lloyd Light, Frank Lloyd Bite, Frank Lloyd Sight.
Interesting fact, Frank Lloyd Light has 50% of the calories of Frank Lloyd Wright. But all the same flavor.
That's right. That's right. Frank Lloyd Wright had lots of flavor too, Andy, as we'll discuss.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. This is going to be a tangy episode.
You guys might see it from, you know, the, well, I mean, we're going to talk about it right here with this section that's called intro.
Yeah. Let's bungfuckers. We're going to do something a little bit different, today.
We are?
Where we're going to start with something called an intro.
Oh,
this sort of sets up the topic for you. And introduces it.
Yeah. This isn't to be confused with the main feed's intro, which is the piece of bullshit that you skip.
This is the part you're going to want to pay attention to.
Pay attention to.
This one has actual information.
That's right.
So, Frank Lloyd Wright was an architect of some renown who designed more than 1,000 buildings.
That's a lot of buildings.
He was hugely influential in the architecture community and is recognized by some as America's greatest architect. His numerous achievements in building stuff overshadows his personal life, which, honestly, was kind of fucked up. We're going to give you some background on Frank Lloyd Wright, talk about why he's famous, and then spill the hot tea on this guy's nasty little secrets.
Ooh, we are going to air his dirty, fucking skid-marked laundry for all you little bunk-funkers out there. You fucking Perez Hilton motherfuckers want to eat this shit up. What was that guy's name? I think it was Perez Hilton. I can't remember. Celebrity gossip blogs, TMZ. Ooh, you just can't wait. We're gonna dish. We're gonna spill.
What's that guy's name? The TMZ guy?
I don't know. Harvey? Douchey fuck.
Douchey fuck. Douchey fuck. Oh, my favorite band. Douchey fuck. So here's some background on Frank Lloyd Wright. Frank Lloyd Wright was born on June 8th, 1867, in the town of Richland Center, Wisconsin. Richland Center is in the southwestern part of the state of Wisconsin.
Yeah.
So I've never been there.
I haven't either.
Okay. Well, according to...
I just want to say that I hated Aaron Rodgers before it was cool.
Okay. Thank you. Green Bay is in the opposite corner of the state for you geography buffs out there. Northeast. According to Wright's autobiography, his mother, who was named Anna Lloyd Jones, was a teacher... declared when she was expecting her baby that her first child would grow up to build beautiful buildings.
Wow. She was fucking right.
So to further that, Anna Lloyd Jones decorated her baby's nursery with engravings of English cathedrals torn from periodicals to encourage the baby to become an architect,
you
I guess.
You could have cut them out.
No, rip them. This is before scissors.
Yeah, the
1870s. 1867. Scissors didn't exist yet. Those weren't invented until 1941. Part of that wartime.
Thank God we have computer chips now so we can have scissors.
Yeah. So anyway, Anna pushed her son to be an architect. In 1870, the Wright family moved to Weymouth, Massachusetts, where Frank...
Massachusetts.
Yeah. I don't know why I said it like that. What kind of an accent is that?
Massachusetts.
Massachusetts. It's like I had a mouthful of jelly beans or something.
You do? Oh,
my funny bone. Oh, that wasn't humorous.
You do have a mouthful of jelly beans, though.
Yeah, well, you would too if you were me.
I don't know what that means.
Fuck you. So... In 1870, the Wright family moved to Weymouth, Massachusetts, where Frank's father, William Carey Wright, was a Unitarian minister to a small congregation. The Wright family, big-time Unitarians.
Like I said.
So William Carey Wright, who was Frank's father, was a musician and a published composer. He was a Baptist minister initially, and then he converted to Unitarianism, to be more in line with Anna's family.
Wow.
And he got admitted to the bar to practice law in 1857.
Wow.
This was really
was an accomplished dude.
I guess jack of all trades, master
of
none.
I don't know if that's fair to say. Have you been admitted to the bar? You got kicked out of a lot of bars.
Kicked out of a lot of bars. Yeah. I've been kicked out or not allowed in for a lot of reasons, being underage, starting fights, not being cool enough, spilling drinks purposefully.
Trying to do flare bar tricks and spilling stuff all over people.
Pretending that I work there at the bar.
Pretending you're a bar shot and sliding yourself across the bar to the man at the end and saying, drink me up.
getting stuck in a toilet, in the restroom.
Having sex with the are you sexy? What's your sex life machine?
Yeah.
Where you put your palm and it like measures your like mojo.
Right. But I, you know, I got a low rating. So I figured, well, if I put my penis on the thing, it'll work. Yeah. Well, it didn't register right away. So right. I was like, oh, this machine's playing hard to get. And then I just had sex with it.
Yeah. Those are dark times.
Anyway, in 1876, Anna saw an exhibit of educational blocks called the Froebel Gifts, the foundation of an innovative kindergarten curriculum. So this is like a this
kindergarten.
These wooden blocks were like part of a kindergarten curriculum. She okay. saw them. She was a teacher. So the blocks themselves, these Froebel Gifts, were geometrically shaped and could be assembled in a variety of combinations to form 2 3-dimensional compositions. Anna bought, at the time, her 9-year-old son, Frank Lloyd Wright, a set. And in his autobiography, Frank said, quote, "For several years, I sat at the little kindergarten tabletop and played with the cube, the sphere, and the triangle. These smooth wooden maple blocks all are in my fingers to this day." He got so many splinters, the blocks were in his fingers for the rest of his life. Thank you.
Simpler times, Andy. Just times. 3 fucking blocks.
Just a 9-year-old at a kindergarten table.
Jeez, always. Nothing but your imagination.
You imagine if that was today, a 9-year-old playing at a kindergarten table? People would be like,
something's wrong.
I have to send him to the remedial class.
Yeah.
So the Wright family kind of sucked financially while they were in Massachusetts. So they
spent too much money on blocks.
Yeah, they spent more than a year's salary on these blocks. So they moved back to Wisconsin, first to Spring Green and then to Madison, the capital. In 1884, William, Frank's father, sued for a divorce from Anna on the grounds of, quote, "emotional cruelty and physical violence and spousal abandonment," end quote. Just keep it in mind.
Wow.
Bunkfuckers. So
wait, him from her?
Yeah, he sued her.
Wow.
So William, Frank's father, then left Wisconsin after the divorce was granted in 1885. Frank said he never saw his father again. In 1886, at age 19, Frank was admitted to study at the University of Wisconsin in Madison. Go Badgers! Hey, Art, do you know the name of Wisconsin's Badger mascot?
Jonathan? Am I close?
Jonathan the Badger.
David?
Oh, this is our mascot.
Paul?
Thomas the Badger.
He's just got a totally normal name.
What, does Thomas have some special significance? No.
Joshua?
Ezekiel?
Abraham?
Job?
I'm going to go with something like Bucky.
Yeah, it's Bucky!
Now, how does that make you feel from an Ohio State guy? Because you got Bucky, too, right?
We got his name? Brutus.
Oh, fuck, Brutus.
What are you, fucking idiot? Jesus Christ. How many times do I have to say it? Bucky this Badger.
This is our mascot.
Brutus Buckeye.
Pontius Pilate the Badger. Barabbas the Badger. Now that's a cool name.
Yeah, Barabbas the Badger. Yeah.
See? I should work at a college.
Yeah, you should.
I...
Maybe a postgraduate college. Anyway. Go. Anyway, jump around.
Jump.
For all you Badger fans. So, Frank was admitted to UW-Madison as a special student and worked under Alan D. Conover, a professor of civil engineering, before Frank left the school without taking a degree. He didn't get his degree.
Know. That's saying
dropped
know.
Out.
He's a fucking dropout. That means he's a genius.
He's a genius. Don't need school.
Doesn't need it.
So, also in 1886, Wright collaborated with the Chicago... The Chicago?
The fuck is wrong with you?
I tried to say Chicago and architectural at the same time, and it came out as Chicago.
Fuck you. Don't besmirch this.
Which
name.
Is the name of my Chicago cover band in high school. Chicago.
Yeah. 25 or 69.
Yeah, we didn't have any actual instruments. It was just people doing pantomiming.
Yeah.
Making noise with their mouth. So in 1886, Frank got the chance to collaborate with the Chicago architectural firm of Joseph Lyman Silsby, accredited as a draftsman and construction supervisor, on the 1886 Unity Chapel, which was built for Wright's family in Spring Green, Wisconsin. So remember, they were big Unitarians. They commissioned this Unity Chapel to be built.
Huge Unitarians.
Frank got to help.
Big old brows on these guys.
Yeah, huge brows. Real Anthony Davis stuff. And Frank got to be the draftsman and construction supervisor for the project. So after this, in 1887, Frank moved to Chicago, presumably in search of a good Chicago dog or an Italian beef sandwich or some deep dish za or a Maxwell Street Polish sausage.
Sausage.
The only reason to come to Chicago.
Yeah, definitely not for the weather.
Or for the traffic. So anyway, instead of doing any of that shit, he took a job with Joseph Lyman Silsby's firm as a draftsman.
Wow.
So collaborated with him in 1886, took a job in 1887. While with the Silsby firm, Frank also worked on two other family projects, his family projects, the All Souls Church in Chicago for his uncle, Jenkin Lloyd Jones, and the Hillside Home School, Hillside Home School in Spring Green for two of his aunts. Frank eventually began to feel like Silsby was underpaying him at $8 per week.
Yeah, dude.
I don't get the problem. That's what I make.
Oh.
Being CEO of my own nutrition shake business called Shake It Up.
I was going to say that might be what you make as co-founder of Whole Enchilada Media. Might be even less.
Yeah. I think it is less than that. Anyway, I've got a lot of lucrative careers. All right. So Frank's feeling underpaid at $8
he's
a week.
He's feeling like he's getting in the draft shaft.
So he did what everybody's doing nowadays. He fucked off out of there and found work as an architectural designer at the firm of Beers, Clay, and Dutton. Frank decided he wasn't ready to design buildings by himself, so he quit again.
Whoa!
He quit Beers, Clay, and Dutton and went back to Silsby, but he got a pay raise.
There you go.
Making
good move.
$8.01 a week. No, I don't know what it was. So
I like Beers, Clay, and Dutton. That sounds like two guys who formed a business and then also decided they were going to form a business with their favorite drink.
This sounds like the pottery version of like wine and art.
Yeah.
Or like skeet shooting. Anyway, in 1888, Frank left Silsby again.
Jeez,
and became an apprentice at the Adler and Sullivan firm. Wright did not get along well with Sullivan's other draftsmen. He wrote that several violent altercations occurred between them during the first years of his apprenticeship.
Jesus Christ.
Fighting with the other draftsmen. Lewis Sullivan, the titular Sullivan, became a mentor to Frank despite all of this stuff. So by 1890, Frank had risen to head draftsman and handled all residential design work in the Adler and Sullivan office. He also had an office right next to his mentor, Lewis Sullivan. Adler and Sullivan, as a firm, generally didn't design or build homes except as a favor to important clients. It was more like commercial buildings.
Wow.
So Frank did design work for residential homes during this period of his life, but mostly in his off time, in the evenings or weekends, since he was busy with doing commercial buildings during the day as part of his job. Frank later claimed total responsibility for the design of these houses, but a careful inspection of their architectural style and accounts from historian Robert Toombley suggest that Sullivan dictated the overall form and motifs of the residential works. Frank's design duties were often reduced to detailing the projects from Sullivan's sketches.
mean, you know,
it's not too scandalous, but
no, hey, this is this guy's vision, but this guy's the one implementing it. It's, you know, who's the one who's doing all the work here?
Look, I'm just throwing this out here. Frank's a good self-promoter. We're going to talk about it a lot
that's
more.
That's true. We're going to talk about his fucked up life.
We're going to get there.
You can see flashes of it already.
Yeah.
Getting in fights, throwing protractors around.
This section flashes of what you're going to hear about later. So to supplement his income and repay his debts, Frank accepted independent commissions for at least 9 houses. We're going to talk more about Frank's financial position. But Frank accepted independent commissions for at least 9 houses during this time at Adler and Sullivan.
Yeah.
Now, Louis Sullivan did not know about Frank's independent work until 1893, when Sullivan recognized that one of the houses, like he saw a house in his neighborhood, and he knew right away it was a Frank Lloyd Wright design. Like he could recognize it from the design of it. So, Frank's contract, he had a 5-year contract, which we will talk about in a little bit, but he had a 5-year contract with the firm, and that contract forbade him from doing any outside work. And this incident led to his departure from Sullivan's firm.
Jesus Christ. So he's quit like how many fucking positions now?
So let's see.
This is wild.
Yeah.
I've never quit anything in my life. You ever quit a job?
I've never quit a job, but I've quit on a lot of things in my personal life. Like being a good son.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I meant jobs specifically.
Oh,
sure,
no.
We'll be here all fucking day. We list the personal shit we've quit in our lives.
No, I've never quit a job. I don't know. I guess
like a lot of people, like they're like, yeah, and then I quit.
I've taken different jobs.
Yeah.
But I've never like quit a job.
Right.
Without just moving to another one, right? Like, I guess I've technically quit jobs.
I guess I have two.
It's not like I've only had one job. But I've never, like, stormed out.
That's right. And your one job is that you shovel poop at a local zoo.
Yeah.
And you don't get paid.
No, no, that's volunteer work.
Oh.
And I do it 8 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I don't really love animals. But I love dung. Ding dong. So, doing these independent homes kind of fucked Frank over from this job at Adler and Sullivan.
Yeah, it did.
So, that said, there are some different versions out there of this story of Frank leaving Adler and Sullivan. So, in his own autobiography, Frank said he was unaware that his side ventures were a breach of his contract. So, when... And Frank says this. This is what Frank is saying.
Yeah.
When Louis Sullivan learned about the side ventures, he was angered and offended. He forbade any further outside commissions and refused to issue Frank the deed to his Oak Park house. We'll talk about it.
What?
We'll talk about it. Until after he completed his 5 years. Frank could not stand all of this hostility from his master. He called him his master. And thought that the situation was unjust. He, quote...
What the fuck, is he a fucking Jedi Padawan situation?
It's a very, very...
Master, please, no. Not sand, I hate it. I killed them all, Master. Even the younglings. Especially the younglings.
I hate children, they're like sand. They can get anywhere.
No, Master, I'm ready. I'm ready.
2 children could fit in 1 adult pair of pants. They're just like sand.
This fucking master. Okay, what's this fucker talking about?
So, Frank said he couldn't stand all this hostility between him and Sullivan, and he thought that the situation was unjust. He, quote, threw down his pencil and walked out of the Adler and Sullivan office, never to return.
Wow, that's dramatic.
Louis Sullivan's partner, Adler, later sent Frank the deed to his house in Oak Park. Again, we will get into that situation. So then that's Frank's version of the story, right?
Of course it makes Frank look fucking cool as hell.
Right. It makes him look like he didn't have a clue. Louis Sullivan was a dick about it.
Right.
And so Frank said, fuck this. He flipped a table, flipped him the bird, and fucking left. Woo!
Big Chad energy from
yeah,
that
big Chad energy.
Take. Yeah.
So one of Frank's apprentices said Frank told a group of apprentice architects that Sullivan fired him on the spot about when he learned about this, you know,
contract breach,
these side projects. The Apprentice also said Frank had another draftsman sign off on the projects because he knew they weren't allowed under his contract. So,
Jesus Christ.
I mean, that pretty much undercuts everything that Frank said in his autobiography. So whatever the real story is, Wright and Sullivan didn't speak for 12 years after that. So Frank and Lewis, tight as could be, this thing, then they didn't speak for 12 years.
I can respect that. You know, Andy, if you ever double-crossed me, I wouldn't speak to you for 12 years. Exactly. 12 years, Andy. What do you think they would be like?
Whew. Well, now I got to figure out a way to double-cross you. So you stop. Leave me the fuck alone. I can't get away from this guy. Help me. So after he left Adler and Sullivan, Frank established his own practice. He was finally ready to strike out on his own. In 1884, Frank was introduced to famed Chicago architect and city planner Daniel Burnham, who offered to finance a four-year education at the École des Beaux-Arts and 2 years in Rome with a job at Burnham's firm on Frank's return to the USA.
Damn, that's a good fucking deal.
That is a great deal. Do you know anything about Daniel Burnham?
No. What did he designed some shit, right? Some cool shit? The Cardinal Building? What did he design?
He's like the city, the layout of the city, like the city plan is like
what he did.
His design.
He did it.
The World's Fair.
Wow, so he's a big deal.
He's a big deal. The 1884?
What does it say?
When was the World's Fair? I don't remember the year, but
1869.
The big World's Fair. He was the like lead designer.
He was the guy, the devil in the white city. That's him.
That's him. That's well. Yeah. Yeah, whatever. You get the idea. The white city, what he was responsible for.
That's
the devil.
Right.
The devil was somebody else.
The devil was somebody else. Okay. Who is it?
Charlie Daniels.
You get into a fiddle contest with the devil, and that's what you do. And the devil's just like, Jesus fucking Christ.
What the hell was
this
that guy's
pathetic.
What the hell was that guy's name? We got to do an episode on that guy.
Yeah.
It's like three H's. It's like Hunter Hearst Helmsley.
Was that a fucking bunker alarm? God damn, that was sick.
Yeah, wow. Bunker Alarm 3000 playing Triple H's name. I can't remember.
Time to play the game.
I can't remember his name. I just said his name the other day.
Dan Johnson.
I don't remember. Anyway, guy's like a huge serial murderer.
Huge serial murderer.
Had this like castle and he.
Oh, Holmes. H.H. Holmes.
Yes. That's it.
That's the famous Chicago.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That'd be a great topic.
That's the devil in the white city.
Yeah. That dude was fucked up beyond belief.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally fucked up.
Totally fucked
very
up.
Very cool.
Very fucking rad.
Very fucking rad. Great doctor. Insurance fraud.
Rocket
murder.
Ball.
Very cool.
Very fucking cool, dudes.
So anyway, Daniel Burnham offers this fucking great deal.
It's a great
to Frank.
Deal.
Frank's like, nah.
What?
Don't want it. Frank turned down the offer, feeling he would be creatively stifled.
Oh my God.
By the classical education.
He has a point. Besquat.
What?
Besquat.
Besquat?
Besquat.
What?
Famous painter.
Oh.
A lot of other things happened to Besquat. But Besquat was a very creative, famous painter. He had all this creative expression and he was so fucking like raw and talented. And then all these fucking people in the art community, you know, just globbed onto him. And then they tried to have him go do like a formal art. He was never fucking trained. He just fucking drew. They had him go trying to do like a formal education. Totally ruined the guy.
Wow.
And then I think he died from like a heroin overdose.
Wow.
So,
I guess they best squashed his dreams. So anyway, Frank turned down the offer.
Oh my God. Jesus fucking Christ. Like Basquash that kid's fucking dreams.
So in 1896, Frank moved his office to a shared space with a few other young architects. I mean, presumably this was like a Regis or a WeWork. I don't know for sure. But he moved to a shared office space with a few other young architects who were inspired by Lewis Sullivan, and the arts and crafts movement. Arts like giggling.
So they're making like fucking macaroni paintings little fucking popsicle stick like birdhouses.
It's basically like you design a building like you normally would, and then you just cover the whole thing in glitter.
Glitter and macaroni, baby.
No, the arts and crafts movement, let's see if I can dig this out of my brain.
Dig
this
it out of your brain.
This was like a popular thing in England in the time immediately preceding when we're talking about here in the late 1800s.
Wow.
Here in the USA. But it's like, I think the general philosophy behind it, the aesthetic of it is sort of like less like mass produced type of thing, like a more stylized, individual, like crafty looking type of thing. So it's like, where it's like, there's like fine, like you might have wallpaper, but instead of it just being like straight lines or something, like it would be like a little design or something.
Right. Right. It feels very handcrafted.
I'm no like architect.
Rather than like row homes, which were like, you know, things. And
then, yeah. So it's more of like an individual like style type.
That
of
makes sense with if you look up some of Frank Lloyd Wright's designs and work.
Right. Yeah.
They're all unique. They're all fucking like bold. We'll talk about it.
They're big. They're bold. They're beautiful.
Bold and brash.
I mean, these are big, beautiful buildings.
Ugh.
So they this group of young architects formed what was eventually known as the Prairie School. It's not a very cool name. So,
no whole enchilada media.
Just saying. So by 1901, Frank had completed about 50 projects, including many houses in Oak Park, Illinois.
Yeah.
Bungfunkers.
Do yourself a favor.
We are Chicago based. And
we're fucking based.
Yeah. We're red pilled. We're based. And we know where Frank Lloyd Wright's homes are in Chicago.
We fucking know where they are.
But there are actually quite a few.
There's a lot of them.
Frank Lloyd Wright houses that are still standing. In fact, just a couple of years ago, if I'm not mistaken, there is a Frank Lloyd Wright home that was on the market on the south side. And it's one of these that hadn't had any upgrades for a while. So you could actually get it for kind of a steal. I think it was like less than $200,000.
That's incredible. I thought you were going to say like a million.
200,000. Like it was much less than a million.
Where on the south side?
I can't remember. Okay. I can't remember the neighborhood. I can't remember where it was exactly, but I think that it was, I don't even remember.
Yeah.
I can't remember the neighborhood, but I think it was like closer to the lake.
Okay.
But like
South Shore.
South of, I don't know. I think it's like south of.
South of 95?
No. I think it was north of 95, closer to the lake.
Bunkfunkers, you guys enjoying this?
Yeah, look it up. I don't know. It's on Zillow or something.
Do yourself a favor, Redfin. Though, and look up Frank Lloyd Wright's houses. Look them up. We're going to talk about it in a second here. Beautiful.
Yeah.
They're fucking gorgeous.
Sure.
They're incredible.
Sure.
I got some feelings about them.
Okay.
I need to share these feelings.
Okay. Well,
with these houses.
All right. Well, you're going to have to put these feelings back in your pants for a second.
So all right, I'm gonna put my pants back on. I'm gonna zip my pants back up.
You can undo your pants and let your feelings be known during the intermission.
That's right.
So in 1901, I guess we already said that he'd completed 50 projects by 1901, and Frank's residential designs of this general time period were known as prairie houses. Prairie school, prairie houses.
Yeah.
So Frank was, we are kind of mentioned this before, but Frank was a good promoter of himself. And when he was ready to quit doing prairie style homes, he went to Europe in 1909 with a portfolio of his work and presented it to Berlin publisher Ernst Wasmuth, who published a book of more than 100 lithographs of Frank's work in 1911. This was Frank's first major European exposure. Now, Art, your first major European exposure was when a breeze blew up your kilt when you were in Scotland.
That is true. I was exposed. I was exposed. Everybody saw my Scotch eggs and my haggis.
Yeah.
Now, yeah. And my banger.
What's the haggis?
It's my taint.
They saw the full Monty, baby.
Yeah.
They saw the full yard, the full Scotland Yard, which is the racing stripe of pubes. Scotland Yard.
The full art breakfast, as it were.
That's right, baby.
They saw your baked beans.
Those are my baked beans.
And your charred tomato.
My fry toast.
Your blood sausage.
No, I wore underwear. Come on.
Hey, fun fact. I've never been to Europe.
You're not allowed.
No.
I have
to settle for exposing myself in the USA. Not allowed to leave the country. Maybe if I stopped exposing myself, I wouldn't be on so many watch lists.
Let's face it, I ain't going to do that.
The story behind you, that is definitely my top five like facts about Andy and stories about Andy that they always bring me joy. Brings an immense smile to my face knowing that you were not allowed to go to Europe is just so fucking funny to me.
Yeah, if you're not familiar with this bit of
it's so funny.
My actual personal lore.
I love it.
I was in the concert band, in the marching band. Total band geek when I was in high school.
You're a band geek. You played the trombone.
I played the trumpet, and then they asked me to switch to the trombone. And I said, yeah, I know how to work a boner. And the rest is history. And so they did this thing. They had this thing called Ohio Ambassadors of Music. And
right.
And it was like a program set up in the state where kids across the state in high school could go to Europe, like a tour. And you get to go to different cities. You play concerts. And all this stuff. And seemed like a great experience. And there was one summer and all of my friends in the band were going, and it was like a selection process and I didn't get selected. And I was like, oh, this kind of sucks. And so I spent like, you know, a few weeks in the summer, whatever, while everyone was gone, just like hanging out by myself. Cause most of my friends were there.
No, you're not telling it right.
And then I found out later. No, I'm telling it right.
Wait,
I'll tell it the right way, and then you tell it how you want to feel it.
Go ahead.
And so then everybody came back, and they were like, you know, we didn't want to tell you this, but now that it's over, I guess we can. Like, you know, you didn't get selected. You didn't get selected because they were, you know, you were basically like banned.
It wasn't based on your merit as a player.
Right. It was because they were worried I would be an embarrassment to the nation. My band director was worried I would embarrass the United States internationally.
You would be an embarrassment to the fucking nation. And that,
what could I have done?
That motherfucker looked at you, little high school Andy, and was like, I can't have that fucker with me for 3 weeks. I'm not going to do it. He's going to embarrass me in France. He's going to embarrass me in England.
Now, fun story, Bunk Funkers.
Oh, my God.
Additional fun story.
Oh, God, I love that story.
Art and I.
So much.
And our friend Skylar.
Oh, fuck.
Had a comedy team called the Fun Fun Boys.
Oh, God.
And our very first sketch show that we wrote.
That's true.
We did at a theater near where I grew up. And this was one of, in our whole time together, this was our most lucrative financially project because.
And our most attended project.
Yeah, we sold like.
There was like 300 people in that audience.
To see our sketch show.
Boy.
You know, when we got asked to do it, you know, it was through like family connections of mine that we got this offer. And my wife explained to the creative director at the theater that this was a very R-rated show. She told me that they were okay with it. I was like, I think they should read the script and make sure that they are okay with this because I don't think this is.
I didn't know that.
And so I sent them the script ahead. They said, it's fine. We want to do something a little more adult in the theater. And well,
God, what a dumb move.
they never really communicated that it was an adult show. And
they never did.
The promotional photo they ran of us was a Photoshop cartoon of us that Art created for Thanksgiving. So it was our promo picture.
Why that one?
I don't know. I don't know why they picked. I think they plucked it off our Facebook page or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, they ran this cartoon photo of us. So people clearly thought that this was a fun family night of comedy.
They also promoted it as like Second City because we had all taken classes at Second City.
Yeah.
Andy and I have never worked for Second City. We've never even made it into the fucking Second City Conservatory, which you can think of like their... you have to audition to get in. Andy and I auditioned.
Look, we're both
twice.
Blackballed from Second City.
Yeah, yeah. To reiterate, like
Second City is like Europe to me. I'm not allowed to go there.
That's true. We have paid the Second City money to fucking learn how to do stupid improv. And then when we tried to like get in to say, hey, we'll pay you more money, they said, we don't want
you. We didn't do it good enough. But anyway, you already know we're not good enough at comedy to make it
right, that's
successfully.
True.
But so we did the show at this theater, and
they totally, I mean, I just want to reiterate, they fucking promoted it so wrong.
It was promoted very wrong. I did a couple of radio interviews in the run up. I know I did an interview for the newspaper and one for the radio,
right.
And separate interviews. And I was like, well, this is, and I made sure in both to like mention that it was like R rated, adults only, 18 and over, whatever.
Yeah.
Don't bring your kids unless you want to hear, you want them to learn about bestiality.
One of the lead sketches in the show is a sketch where we talk about Andy plays a dad who has had sex with a deer multiple times.
Skylar wrote this sketch.
Yeah.
The idea of the sketch
right.
was that this dad like says ridiculous things when he gets mad.
Right.
Like he said, I will shit on a fire.
Uh-huh.
And then he like gets really pissed off and he says, I will fuck a deer.
Yeah.
And so he keeps getting like wound up and he keeps saying, I will fuck a deer. And then at the end, it turns out he wants to have sex with a deer.
Yeah.
That's his whole thing.
Yeah.
And so.
So that kind of tells you this kind of weird, stupid sketch of this. And it was there's tons of other weird, crazy shit.
It's a lot of stuff like that. And obviously it didn't go over that well.
No, it didn't.
Bungfuckers, as far as performance goes, sharpest we ever were doing that show.
Probably.
We did it for like 4 weeks here in Chicago.
Yeah.
And we had like a while in between doing this show. It was around holiday time, so we swapped out a couple things for some Christmas themed.
We did?
Yeah. Kid at a business meeting. We made it like a holiday pitch instead of just insensitive things. I forget. There was some other stuff. The point is, we did it really well.
Yeah.
We nailed it.
We did.
And it went over like a lead balloon. There were a few people that were younger that really enjoyed it. But most of the people were older and hated it.
A couple of people walked out.
Some people walked out. An old woman apparently told the box office that there was so much foul language. And I believe her quote was that she didn't pay money to see this shit. Which seems a little hypocritical.
Very hypocritical.
The point is, it didn't go over well. And to tie this back into me not being allowed to go to Europe, my band director from high school was a director of the theater, like the foundation for the theater.
Yeah.
And yeah, we also now are banned from performing at that theater.
We're banned from that theater?
I don't know. I say we're banned. I don't know if we ever got officially banned, but
I know.
The dude who
booked us, the creative director, like he liked it.
He had fun
with it, but
it was
like,
very nice. He wouldn't respond to my message after the show.
Right.
Like I sent something to him and he never even responded.
Yeah.
But the point is, we're probably never allowed to play that theater again.
Yeah.
I saw my cousin recently got married. And he saw my band director at the wedding, at the reception. He wouldn't make eye contact with me.
Wow.
Walked.
He knew he was right. He was right. You would have embarrassed the nation.
I would have embarrassed him.
You would have done something with that trombone. You would have been making fart jokes. You would have been using the trombone as like a big boner penis to push up the Leaning Tower of Pisa. You would have been doing all
anytime
sorts of goofy
anything
shit.
Went wrong, I would have gone, wah, 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 wah.
He was so fucking right.
Yeah, he was a visionary.
He was. He knew. Every time he sees you, he's like, I was so fucking right.
So anyway.
Kid to Europe. Thank God I protected
Europe. The bottom line is.
I'm like, a hero.
The bottom line is that apparently my high school band director is my nemesis now.
Oh, creative, God.
He's my creative nemesis.
It's true.
You know what's funny, though? Ty, callback to the beginning of the show. He actually, in high school, was in a Chicago cover band.
Wow.
Loves Chicago.
Great band.
All right. So that
anyway,
was
Frank Lloyd Wright.
Anyway, that was our detour into my personal life.
Little
and
detour
history.
Into one of my favorite pieces of Andy's lore.
Wait, what? How? Wait, before we go on to Frank Lloyd Wright, you said I was telling it wrong. How would
I guess you
tell
told it right. You got to the part that I love, which is just that. Like, basically, they thought you were an embarrassment to the nation, and they didn't want to let you come on the trip.
And nobody told me that before.
Nobody told you that before. You so, thought maybe you just didn't get it because you weren't good enough.
I was, yeah.
Or whatever, you just didn't make it.
Yeah, I felt, you know, I was like, man, it seems, like, weird that everybody else would get to go and not me.
You were the only one.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not, like, the only person.
Yeah, okay.
But, like, I had a close group of friends. And in that group of friends, everybody went except me. And then, of course, they come back and they're like, oh, they're all talking about Europe. And I was like, okay, I get it. I get it. They're like, oh, you got to meet all the friends we met, you know, on this trip.
They made all these friends.
Like, great.
Great.
Very cool. Cool. I was here, you know, playing video games. And then it's like, oh, by the way.
Jesus Christ, they laid it in.
Your band director didn't want you to go because you would embarrass the USA. Of all the fucking shit that the USA does to embarrass itself, me, I'm the thing that's going to, oh God, Europe has such a sterling opinion of Americans. I mean, I guess it was post 9/11. Maybe they were still feeling that like 9/11 vibe, but it's, oh me, I'm the one that's going to fucking embarrass America.
Oh my God.
High school me. Oh, people in France are going to be like, oh my God. Sacre bleu! I used to love America, and now I hate them. Oh, that horrible teenager! Yeah. Well, I say, this chap's not the sort of American I'm used to.
Oh my God! Bungfuckers, my face hurts. Oh, God. I'm so glad that everyone got to hear that story. Oh, fuck. I love that story so much. It brings me so much joy. Fucking band director.
My nemesis.
Could just eat that story up all day long, blend it into a milkshake. All right, we gotta fucking finish up Frank Lloyd Wright.
We
haven't even got to the fucked up
part.
This is just
what happened. We had to go to our fucked up lives.
That's
well,
true.
My fucked up life, I guess.
Yeah.
So anyway, in 1917, Frank began building buildings in Japan.
Another place where you may or may not be allowed.
Definitely not allowed in Japan. It's too tidy and orderly.
Oh, yeah.
And people care too much about each other.
That's true.
People love supporting, you know, societal norms.
It's a very collective society.
Right. And I'm a cowboy, baby.
Moo, I'm literally a cow.
Move over, Japanese people. Coming through. Honk, honk. On my rascal. Zoom, zoom.
Oh, God, they would hate you.
Bonjour. This is Fabulously Delicious, the French food podcast. I'm Andrew Pryor. And every week, I bring you the wonderful and fabulous people involved in French food, whether they're here in France like me or from around the world. Enchanté. Each week, we dive into a specific topic, be it a French dish, an ingredient, or a French cuisine cooking technique. My guests are all about French food. So come join me on Fabulously Delicious, the French food podcast. Bon app.
So anyway, Frank's work in Japan ended up inspiring a lot of young Japanese architects. He's having a global reach. So About this time, Wright conceived a new type of dwelling that came to be known as the Usonian House, which was born out of a concept proposed in his 1932 book, The Disappearing City. Usonian houses commonly featured flat roofs and were usually constructed without basements or attics. As in the prairie houses, Usonian living areas had a fireplace as a point of focus. Bedrooms, which were typically isolated and relatively small, encouraged the family to gather in the main living areas. Many features of modern American homes date back to Wright. Open plans, slab-on-grade foundations, and simplified construction techniques that allowed more mechanization and efficiency in building. So, Frank ultimately left quite a legacy, inspiring architects worldwide, and with impressive structures still awing people today, like New York City's Guggenheim Museum in the heart of Manhattan.
The Googs.
The Googs. So that's the background on Frank Lloyd Wright. Yeah. Now, Art,
did you look up any of his buildings?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They're beautiful. You know, I'm not somebody who knows anything about architecture. I couldn't tell you the first thing about it, but this is how you know this guy's great. Even if you know nothing about architecture, you can look at this guy's buildings and be like, God damn, that's a fucking beautiful house. That's cool. The waterfall, or what is it? The
Falling Water.
Falling Water is probably the most famous, most like, I don't want to say avant-garde, but like just, I think, the most spectacle of most spectacular house.
What they don't tell you is that house had to go through a couple of, like, you know, more modern renovations,
well,
if you will.
Fucking ancient, yeah.
To help it not collapse.
Yeah, it's over 100 years old, Andy. Come on. Cut it some slack.
No, I won't.
But I grew up in a house that was more than 100 years old.
Even his Usonian houses, which is not a layout that I like, but I still look at those and you're like, oh, this is every fucking modern Pinterest fucking house.
I mean,
and he was doing it in the early 1900s.
I think it's funny to sit today with the way that people talk about homes today.
Yeah.
And go back to Frank Lloyd Wright and think of something like an open floor plan as being revolutionary.
Right.
When it's like, oh, just everybody has an open floor plan.
Everything's
like,
an open floor plan.
You know, that's like a Frank Lloyd Wright.
Yeah.
Pushed idea.
Right.
I'm not going to say he created it, but
no.
Like, this is something that he pushed.
It's in a lot of his design.
Right.
Thoughtful design. But then he's just got, like, even the prairie houses are like, whoa, like, this is fucking wild. Like, some of these estates that he's built and different things. And it's like, goddamn, that's some beautiful houses.
Yeah.
It's like watching, you know, you might not know anything about basketball, but you watch fucking Michael Jordan play and you're like, fuck, I get it. That's incredible. Yeah.
I don't know. I feel about architecture the way I feel about art. Not you, but like fine art.
Oh.
Or like music or anything. I really don't know anything about anything. I guess I'm a bit of an idiot. And I only know, it's like you can see some things and you say, I like that.
Sure. Like, it's subjective.
Yeah. It's like, you know,
Most definitely.
Frank Lloyd Wright, I can look at some of these buildings that he's responsible for and I go, I like that.
Yeah, no, I think they're beautiful buildings.
I don't know anything about like painting, but it's like you see some paintings. I like that.
That's right.
I don't know anything about music. Obviously, I'm not allowed to go to Europe because I can't play music. It would be too embarrassing for the USA as a nation. You know, I would be the representative of the United States in this instance. You know, despite all of the adults around and me being an underage teen, a hot, horny teen, underage. Right. Not legal.
Yeah.
Not even barely legal. Not legal at all.
Yeah.
They would say, oh my God, this is so horrible. A child acting this way. What an embarrassment to the entire nation. Clearly this child is the representative of the entire United States of America. And all of the adults with him are completely blameless.
Yeah. Like, I can't imagine that anyone rolling in your fucking crew was on their best behavior while in Europe. Maybe not. Maybe you're the instigator. I could see that.
I just like to have a good time, baby. Woo! Woo! But I hear something I like, I'm like, I like that.
Yeah, no, definitely.
If somebody who knows a lot about music might be like, well, here's all the reasons that this is a fucking shitty song. And I'll be like, I don't care. I like it.
Right.
Dickhead, shut the fuck up.
Yeah,
Killjoy. Hey, I got something you can listen to.
Sound of my foot going up your ass.
It's me farting into your face. friggin' dummy.
That's fucking aggressive. That's really aggressive. That is definitely...
Well, don't come up to me and tell me the song I like is
that
shit.
That is aggravated battery. Believe it or not.
Oh, another band I love. Aggravated battery.
Oh, yeah.
Like I'm picturing a really mad, like, D battery. there's a good mascot. Aggravated
a
battery.
Great mascot. The fighting aggravated batteries. I think these houses are beautiful. And, you know, I... Personally, what I don't like Usonian style houses. I don't like houses that are on slab. I want a basement. So fuck all that noise about the family gathering and fuck that. I want a basement where I can sit and be safe like a little fucking underground dwelling creature that shouldn't be allowed outside. That's how I like right. My life. That's why I like the bunker. I like living in a tiny fucking cave, like a disgusting creature that is hidden from society. I like that. That's a comforting feeling to me. I feel at home there.
Right. Yeah. You hate open floor plans because you like for each part of the house to be its own lair and completely segregated and difficult to get to from other parts of the house.
That's right.
And especially from the any entrances.
That's right.
Or exits to the home.
I hate windows. I don't want any natural light in my house. I don't need it.
I can see why you love Frank Lloyd Wright.
No, these are beautiful homes. But this dude was fucked up.
So one interesting thing is that Simon and Garfunkel have a song called So Long, Frank Lloyd Wright.
So long, Frank Lloyd Wright. We will kiss you goodnight.
Here's to you, Frank Lloyd Wright's son. I think that's how it goes. I honestly have no idea. But they have a song called Frank Lloyd Wright, and Paul Simon wrote it because Art Garfunkel was leaving the group. Obviously, Art Garfunkel with his hugely successful solo career.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Way overshadowing Paul Simon's solo career. But Art Garfunkel left the duo, and he asked Paul Simon.
Great name.
You know, Art Garfunkel was, yeah, it is, was an architecture major. He asked Paul Simon write a song about Frank Lloyd Wright. So Paul Simon didn't know anything about Frank Lloyd Wright, so he wrote the song called So Long, Frank Lloyd Wright. And I don't think it has anything to do with Frank Lloyd Wright. I have no idea, but
it's kind of fucked up.
Yeah. But that's fun fact. Now we've been teasing it and we're ready to get you off.
Frank Lloyd Wright, fucked up life. He's got a fucked up fucking life. This dude's life is fucked up. Frank Lloyd Wright, fucked up life.
It's fucked up. So now we're going to talk about how fucked up Frank Lloyd Wright's life is.
Super fucked up, dude.
So, in 1888, let's start as far back as we want to go. In 1888, Frank met Catherine Lee, or Kitty Tobin, by bumping into her at a mask ball at All Souls Church. Nothing.
That makes me unsettled.
Mask ball at church. Frank said he wanted to marry her, quote unquote, right away. Kitty was only 17 at the time. Whereas Frank was 21. We told you. Dude was fucked up.
He's fucked up, dude.
So on June 1st, 1889, the 22-year-old Wright married 18-year-old Kitty. Wright's mother, Anna, collapsed at the wedding. She did not want another woman by his side. Healthy. Healthy relationship there.
Jesus Christ.
So, I mean, and there's more to come. So the titular Louis Sullivan of Adler and Sullivan helped get the newlyweds, Frank and Kitty, started out financially by giving Frank a 5-year employment contract, a much discussed 5-year employment contract. He also loaned Frank $5,000 to build a house.
Wow.
Frank took the money, bought a lot in Oak Park, Illinois. All right. Remember, we talked about the deed, which is a suburb of Chicago, in case nobody knew that. I mean, we've talked about Oak Park a lot.
South side suburb.
Yeah, south. More, I would say,
or
west.
Or is it west?
West.
Oh, yeah, it is west.
West.
What am I thinking of?
I don't know. Everything is fucking named Oak or Grove.
I'm thinking of Tinley Park.
Yeah, it's close. Everything's a park or an oak or a grove or whatever.
Right,
or a deer. It's got deer in it. Everything's got fucking deer in it. Just come up with some original names. Jesus Christ.
Like Sphincterville.
Sphincterville. Shitstain Town. Donkey Ball City.
Ass Scratch. I live in Ass Scratch.
I got Ass Scratch Fever. Yeah, my name's Ted Nugget. I got Ass Scratch Fever. Woo woo! Shooting off my bow, shooting off my crossbows. Woo!
Ted Nugget.
Ass Scratch Fever. So anyway.
I wish I knew another Ted Nugent song, but I don't.
No, I don't. Anyway. So Frank bought this lot in Oak Park. He gave the house that was already on the lot to his mother and built a house next to it to live with Kitty. Healthy. There's more evidence of a super healthy relationship between Frank and his mother.
Jesus fucking Christ.
So despite Lewis Sullivan's loan and the overtime pay he gave Frank for all of his work, Frank was constantly short on money. He admitted that his poor finances were likely due to his expensive tastes in wardrobe and vehicles and the extra luxuries he designed into his house.
Wow.
Like a whole room full of chandeliers. So within 5 years of marriage, Frank and Kitty had four of their altogether six children. All right. So strap in here because we're going to go through the list and give you the birth years of each of their children.
You bet we are.
First, there was Frank Lloyd Wright Jr., who was born in 1890. Which keep in mind, they got married June of 1889. So they didn't waste any time. Then there was John Lloyd Wright, who was born in 1892, Catherine Wright, 1894, David Samuel Wright, 1895. Then after an actual break in birthing babies, there was Francis Wright Caro in 1898 and Robert Llewellyn Wright in 1903.
Wow. Whew.
So in 1903, the same year Robert Llewellyn Wright was born, Frank was designing a house for Edwin Cheney, who was a neighbor in Oak Park, Frank became enamored with Cheney's wife, Mama.
Whoa, Mama!
Mama, hubba,
Mama.
So Frank and Mama.
Whoa, Mama! Whoa, Mama!
I don't know. I wrote that and I just couldn't stop laughing about. Whoa, Mama!
Yeah, that's what he said.
Yowza!
He's driving in his like very expensive jalopy at the time, like a fucking Model T.
He's got a monocle, big cigar, top hat.
Yeah, wearing a fucking very fancy suit. Rolls down the monocle. Whoa, Mama!
Beep, beep.
Beep, beep. Radiator of the fucking car shoots up.
Whoa, baby!
Let me get some of that pussy. I'm an architect, baby. Come on. Mama.
It is Frank Lloyd Wright. Very historically accurate impression.
Frank Lloyd Wright. Oh, Mama. Mama.
Out. Ball one. So.
Oh, God.
Frank and Mama's relationship became the talk of the town in Oak Park.
Oh, I bet.
Because they often could be seen taking rides in Wright's automobile through the town.
Ooga! Oh, baby, they're canoodling.
They're canoodling. So in 1909, Frank and Mama met up in Europe, leaving their spouses and children behind.
Jesus Christ.
Frank stayed in Europe for almost a year, first in Florence, where he lived with his eldest son, Lloyd, and later in Fiesole, Italy, where he lived with Mama. During this time, Edwin Cheney, Mama's husband, granted a divorce to Mama, but Kitty Wright, still refused to grant one to Frank. So after Frank returned to the United States in October of 1910, he persuaded his mother to buy land for him in Spring Green, Wisconsin. Frank began to build himself a new home, which he called Taliesin, and he started that by May of 1911. Frank moved Mama in with him, effectively abandoning his family with Kitty.
Whoa, Mama.
Oh, Mama. So, On August 15th, 1914, while Frank was working in Chicago, a servant at Taliesin named Julian Carlton, who had supposedly been fired by Mama, set fire to the living quarters of Taliesin and then murdered seven people with an axe as the fire burned.
What the fuck?
So the dead from this attack included Mama.
What?
Her two children with Edwin Cheney, John and Martha Cheney, a gardener named David Lindblom, a draftsman named Emil Brodel.
What are these names?
A workman named Thomas Brunker.
Come on! That's Mr. Bunker!
Thomas Brunker.
Come on!
And another workman's son named Ernest Weston.
Holy fuck!
So seven people axe murdered while Taliesin burned. So Julian Carlton swallowed hydrochloric acid immediately following the attack.
What?
In an attempt to kill himself. He didn't die and was taken to jail. He then died from starvation 7 weeks after the attack, despite receiving medical attention.
Holy shit. Oh my God, that's fucking insane. Whoa, Mama.
Rip Mama. I mean,
Rip Mama.
Rest in piss.
Oh man, that's fucked up.
Yeah. So in 1922, Kitty Wright finally granted Frank a divorce. So this is.
Hey, sorry that your mistress finally died.
8 years after the fire at Taliesin.
What kind of card do you get somebody for that? It's like, hey, sorry that your mistress died in an axe murder and fire.
Sorry that your mistress.
Hallmark, do you make a card like that?
Sorry that your mistress. Hey. It's like a real sad looking elephant.
Yeah.
It's like kind of a blue hue to the front of the card. And it's like, hey, I heard about what happened to your mistress and her natural children with her former husband. Just want to say I'm thinking of you. So, Frank and Kitty finally get divorced in 1922. Under the terms of the divorce, though, Frank was required to wait 1 year before he could marry his then mistress. He moved on to another mistress named Maud Miriam Knoll.
Whoa, Maud.
So Frank started up a relationship with Miriam shortly after Mama's murder.
Jesus Christ, dude. Keep it in your fucking pants.
Frank also moved Miriam into Taliesin again years before he was divorced from Kitty. Now, Frank and Miriam's relationship started because Miriam sent Frank romantic sympathy notes.
What?
After the murders at Taliesin. She referred to Frank as, quote, Lord of my waking dreams.
Oh, baby.
And, I mean, frankly, no red flags in this relationship that I can see.
This is so
fucked
up.
If I had to guess, I would say that this probably, they were married for the rest of their lives and everything was fine. So anyway, Frank and Miriam finally got married in November of 1923 after the year had passed as per the divorce decree. But Miriam's addiction to morphine led to the failure of the marriage in less than 1 year.
What the fuck?
Yeah, right. She was a morphine addict.
Oh my God. It's not over yet, bunk bunkers. There's more.
We're only like a part of the way through.
Holy fuck.
In 1924, after Frank and Miriam separated, but while they were still married, Frank met Olga Lazovich Hinzenberg, who went by Olgivana, who was 32 years younger than Frank.
Olgivana.
So she was 32 years younger than Frank and was also a married mother when they met.
What the fuck?
And you gotta admit, Frank's got a type.
Dude, this guy's got mommy issues.
He's got a type.
Big time. Holy fuck.
Healthy. Frank and Olgivana moved in together at Taliesin in 1925.
I thought it burned down.
Well, he rebuilt it. After the fire, he rebuilt it.
He rebuilt it.
Yeah.
That's so fucked up.
It's still there today. You could go visit.
You could go visit.
It's in Wisconsin. We'll take a field trip someday.
Sure.
Spring Green. Yeah. So they moved in together at Taliesin in 1995. In 1925 did Frank and Olgivana. And soon after that, Olgivana became pregnant.
God.
Their daughter, who was born out of wedlock, Iovana, was born on December 2nd, 1925. So on April 20th, 1925, this is before Iovana was born, another fire destroyed the bungalow at Taliesin.
Not the bungalow.
The bungalow. Crossed wires from a newly installed telephone system were deemed to be responsible for the fire, which destroyed a collection of Japanese prints that Frank estimated to be worth $250,000 to $500,000, which would be, like, in 2020 dollars, like $3.5 million to just over $7 million in
Jesus
value.
Jesus Christ.
That all burned up in the fire in the bungalow.
This motherfucker.
So in 1926, Olga Ivanovna's ex-husband, Vladimir Hinzenberg.
Come on. With these fucking names.
A lot of good names in this one.
This is unbelievable.
Vladimir Hinzenberg.
Whoa, Vladimir Hinzenberg.
Oh, Vladimir.
It's Vladimir.
Yeah.
It's not Vladimir.
So Vladimir was seeking custody of his daughter with Olga Ivanovna, who is named Svetlana. Svetlana Hinzenberg. Which sounds like a fake actress in a movie. Svetlana Hinzenberg. Anyway,
I can't take it, these names.
So while Vladimir is trying to get custody of Svetlana, Miriam, Frank's at the time wife, I think they're married at this point, I'm pretty sure. Miriam contrived to have Frank charged with violating the Mann Act, which, if you're not familiar with the Mann Act,
which was, of course, part of the Jimmy Kimmel and Adam Carolla show, The Mann Show.
Right. Yeah, this was. This was the
they decreed a law.
Right. Yeah. But the Mann Act is basically this law that it's about like transporting girls across state lines for immoral purposes. So,
of course, it's called the Mann Act.
So, yeah, right. It's M-A-N-N. So Miriam decided that Frank should be charged for violating the Mann Act.
Because he brought a woman across
for
state lines.
For transporting a woman, Miriam. She was suggesting that he should be charged for transporting herself across state lines for quote unquote immoral purposes.
Now, your wife did a similar thing when you took a trip. You took a fun trip to Wisconsin together.
Right.
And as soon as you crossed state lines.
It was our honeymoon. She realized she'd made a horrible mistake. Contacted authorities.
Said you violated the Mann Act.
Right. And they agreed.
Yeah, they agreed.
Tis no man. Tis a remorseless eating machine. Anyway, all of this legal trouble forced Frank and Olga Ivanovna into hiding. Had to go on the lam.
Okay.
So in October 1926, Frank and Olga Ivanovna were actually accused. They are like legitimately accused by authorities of violating the Mann Act, and they got arrested in Tonka Bay, Minnesota. The charges, though, were eventually dropped.
Oh my God.
So also in 1926, it's a busy time for Frank. Frank's bank attempted to foreclose on Taliesin. So Frank and Olga Ivanovna tried to get away from all these legal problems and foreclosure on Taliesin by going to California. I mean, as you do, just run away from your problems.
Yeah.
So Miriam then tried to have them arrested in California. So Frank and Miriam's divorce finally went through in 1927. Frank was again required to wait for 1 year before remarrying. So he did. And then he and Olga Ivanovna got married in 1928. In the summer of 1928, while they were still in California, Miriam showed up and paid a visit to Frank at Olga Ivanovna's home in La Jolla, where she destroyed $1,000 worth of furnishings in the home.
This is unfucking believable.
The whole thing went to court. They charged Miriam with destroying the property in their house.
Oh, my God.
In the summer of 1928, and Miriam was sentenced to 30 days in jail. The sentence was suspended, contingent on Miriam paying the homeowner for the damage. As a fuck you to Frank and Olga Ivanovna, though, Miriam brought countercharges in court against them of being lewd and dissolute persons.
Whoa! Holy fuck!
Now, I mean, Art, you gotta admit, it's lucky that nobody's ever brought charges of being lewd and dissolute persons against us, because...
Oh my God!
We would definitely lose that case.
I didn't even realize that was a law!
I mean, I can't wait for my band director to file charges for me being lewd and dissolute.
They would have so many character witnesses from all the one-star reviews.
You could fill
holy shit.
You could fill an arena with all the people that have written us one-star reviews. Yeah. So yikes.
Holy fuck.
So that happened. Now, in 1932, Frank and Olga Ivanovna put out a call for students to come to Taliesin to study and work under Frank while they learned architecture and spiritual development.
Oh, okay.
That was Olga Ivanovna's contribution. Frank does the architecture. She does the spiritual development. So they called it the Taliesin Fellowship.
And my axe.
Said the ghost of that fucking servant guy that they fired.
Holy oh, shit. God, I didn't even think about that. Just anytime I hear fellowship, I just immediately think of Gimli.
Yeah,
but you're right. Axe. I guess it was Julian Carlton saying that.
Yeah, and my axe.
From the grave.
So a total of 625 people joined the Taliesin Fellowship in Wright's lifetime. Wright used the fellowship to find workers for projects he was working on. There was quite a bit of controversy over the living conditions and education of the fellows in the program.
Oh, my God.
One apprentice wrote, quote, "He is devoid of consideration and has a blind spot regarding others' qualities. Yet I believe that a year in his studio would be worth any sacrifice."
Wow.
So, I mean, it sounds a little bit like Stockholm Syndrome, but
very much. This is very much a cult.
Speaking to the New York Post, co-author of 2006, The Fellowship,
and My Axe,
Roger Friedland said, quote, "They not only worked in the drawing room, but farmed his crops, made his food, cleaned, and paid tuition for it. It was brilliant because Wright was broke."
This dude is a cult leader.
He's a cult leader. Because there were so many men and so few women at Taliesin, Friedland said, the Wrights dictated their workers' sex lives, rotating the few women as needed.
What?
On the plus side, Friedland noted, many young gay men found the compound a safe space during homophobic times.
I can't fucking believe what I'm reading. He literally, like, how has this never been made into a fucking movie? Because this is nuts.
This is crazy.
This is fucking crazy.
There's too much for a movie. You'd have to make a freaking trilogy.
You'd have to make a fucking limited series on HBO.
1920 through 1928 alone is one film.
Jesus Christ.
So.
He started a fucking cult.
Basically, yeah.
Oh my God.
Built around himself. He was the cult leader.
Jesus.
So, fast forward a little bit to April 4th, 1959. Frank was hospitalized for abdominal pains and was operated on April 6th. He seemed to be recovering, but he died quietly on April 9th. You might think this was the end of Frank's drama, but if that's what you think, clearly you haven't been paying attention to the rest of this
that's
episode.
That's very true.
So, according to Frank's wishes, his body was interred in the Lloyd Jones Cemetery, his family cemetery, next to the Unity Chapel. Oh, boy.
Chapel.
Oh, my God. I got so many jelly beans in my mouth now. I don't swallow them. I just keep putting them in. So this was his mother's family's cemetery, the Lloyd Jones Cemetery, which was next to the Unity Chapel near Taliesin in Wisconsin. Now, old Giovanna's dying wish had been that Frank, she, and their daughter, and her daughter by her first marriage, all be cremated and interred together in a memorial garden being built at Taliesin West, the home they built together in Arizona. Although Olgivana had taken no legal steps to move Frank's remains, and against the wishes of other family members, as well as the Wisconsin legislature in 1985, Frank's remains were removed from his grave by members of the Taliesin Fellowship, cremated, and sent to Scottsdale, where they were later interred in the memorial garden. Frank's original grave in Wisconsin is empty, but still marked with his name.
Holy fuck!
And that's Frank Lloyd Wright's fucked up life.
Holy shit, dude. Bunk bunkers.
The drama didn't end when he died.
Holy shit.
The fellowship dug up,
they dug up his body, fucking body.
Cremated it and sent it to Arizona.
Oh my God.
They dug up his corpse. And then they burned it. And then they sent the ashes to Arizona.
Who would have known this fucking gifted architect? It's such a fucked up life.
So fucked up.
Oh my God, bunk bunkers. I mean, that's a crazy fucking story. I don't know what, I don't care what you're saying. I mean, that's a crazy fucking story.
Look, I didn't know any of this. I knew next to nothing about Frank Lloyd Wright.
How did we come across this topic? No one sent this in.
No, this is one, you know, look, we did.
You were perusing something.
What did we do recently? Mother Teresa. And I really liked doing Mother Teresa.
Yeah, you like, we like shitting on people.
I like taking somebody that people think is a good person and being like, hey, but here's why they fucking suck. No, I do think that it's interesting, though, because, you know, in popular culture and, you know, popular memory, a lot of people are remembered fondly. You know, it's not polite, I guess, in society to like shit on the dead or to like speak ill of the dead unless they're like universally reviled.
Sure.
Like anybody can say any fucking thing about Hitler. Nobody cares, right?
Right.
Like, nobody's going to be like, should be respectful of the dead. It's right. Like, whatever.
Right.
But, you know, you start saying stuff about Mother Teresa and people are like, well, she did a lot of good stuff. And it's like, yeah, well, no, she didn't. Fuck you. And so I was like, hey, let me look out. Are there any other people that are sort of like Mother Teresa that are kind of like very well respected or like,
right,
you know, seemingly have like good public reputations, but actually are kind of pieces of shit. And I don't know so much. I guess Frank is kind of a piece of shit.
Yeah.
But his life is just so fucked up. I was like, I can't believe what I'm reading.
I know.
This has got to be a debunked.
You got to think. Yeah. You don't think of this guy having this crazy, especially like the 1800s and like the early, the time turn of the century. You don't think of that as being like a fucked up, debaucherous time. But like, this is very fucked up.
Extremely.
There was an axe murder.
An axe murder.
One axe murder would be like a defining trait in anyone's life. This guy had like multiple fucking axe murders and multiple fires and started a cult. People dug up his grave, like married multiple women and had multiple mistresses.
I watched like a Wisconsin like local news broadcast.
Yeah.
I mean, mostly I watched it to like learn how to pronounce some of the names to make sure I was saying them right.
Okay.
But they had an author they were interviewing as part of this piece. And he basically described the whole axe murder as like, this is like almost, it was in the press at the time, but this is like one of those things that Frank managed to like bury.
Jesus almost. Christ.
You know, like it was very much in the press. His personal life was very much in the press at the time, but he managed to like right the ship, no pun intended. I guess I was kind of trying to go for a pun, but I didn't want to necessarily make the one that I did.
Okay.
But anyway,
all right.
He was able to right the ship and like basically correct the public perception of his life.
Jesus Christ.
So he managed to like get people to ignore all of this lewd.
Hey, didn't somebody fire a servant at your fucking estate and then they went on a murderous rampage and burnt it down and killed your mistress and all like her fucking children?
Look at these lithographs. Look at how the fireplace is in the center.
Slab. It's slab on grade.
The only thing I want slab on grade is some ribs. You know what I'm saying?
I had ribs from deer tonight.
Did you really?
By the way, yeah. From Costco.
Wow. Were they good?
They were okay.
Were they on sale?
They tasted good. Oh, no. They were not sale. Oh, God. I squashed my testicles trying to cross my legs. Jesus
Christ.
Oh, boy.
Andy's an axe murderer. Bugfuckers, I mean, you know what? Let us know what you think. Is this guy's life fucked up or not?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's fucked up. If you go to Frank Lloyd Wright's life and you're like, that's not so bad. Like, I want to hear about your life. You're right. You're the next subject for debunked.
You are.
Give us your life story.
But anyway,
Jeremy.
Yeah, we are getting ready to see your comments, Jeremy. We already know what you're gonna say.
John
Hendricks. You gonna post a meme about it?
God, all right. All right. No, and you know what's really fucked up? You said one axe murder would be enough. One axe murder and arson on your home would be enough for like to make most people's life like, oh, that's a pretty fucked up event in that person's life. And then off the back of that, to start getting sultry condolence letters.
Oh, my God.
From a woman, and then you start a relationship with her.
And she turns out to be addicted to morphine.
Morphine addict.
So then you ditch her.
So you...
And you go date some, like, Eastern European woman or whatever.
Who's Ivana, also married.
Who's married to a fucking vampire. Who wants his fucking children back. He's like, half
I vampire. Must have back my daughter. Bring her back to my family castle. I must have my dear Olga Vanna. Svetlana!
Svetlana? Olga Vanna? Svetlana?
I will take you to court as long as the court can meet at night.
It's night court.
I want to see a remake of Night Court, but everybody's vampires.
Bleh! It's me, Bull, the bailiff.
I've never seen the show.
Wow.
Harry
Anderson.
What'd you call me? Whoa, mama. And
Whoa, mama.
So that's just, it's an unbelievable fucking story.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, this guy was fucking slinging homes, slaying puss, and slinging homes left and right. It's incredible.
He's a freaking, he's a home wrecker.
He's a home wrecker. He's and a home
builder. Home wrecker. The home wrecking home builder. I mean, if, look, if Frank Lloyd Wright were alive today and he was an architect and he was like, you know what? I'm going to do a series of ads for my architecture business, but I want to look like I'm a personal injury attorney. It would have been like, do you need a house built or do you need your wife seduced? Boom. Call Frank Lloyd Wright, the home wrecking home builder. And he like busts through a wall and he's like, oh, fuck your wife and build a house. Do you need a new shed and your wife needs some new dick? Call me, Frank Lloyd Wright. Call 888-6969.
Oh, my God. Oh, fuck. Bunkfunkers. Jesus Christ. My face hurts.
Wow.
My ribs hurt from laughing. This has been a really fun episode.
Yeah.
Jesus fucking Christ.
This
guy's life is so fucked up.
So fucked up. So fucked up. Well, we hope you enjoyed this trip down Frank Lloyd Wright Lane, Bunkfunkers. I agree with Art. Let us know what you think about Frank Lloyd Wright's fucked up life. Do you think it's fucked up or do you think it's cool as hell?
Yeah. Is this guy a badass pimp?
Frank Lloyd Wright, fucked up dude or badass pimp? You be the judge here on Andy and Art Debunked. Was I wrongly banned from going to Europe? Let us know.
I think I know the answer to that, Paul.
Yeah, the answer is no. It was right. It was just, it was the correct decision. But you know what? I'm still bitter. But hey, got I'm bitter about everything that never happened to me in my life.
It's true.
Yeah. So, Art, do you have any closing remarks you'd like to make?
I don't know. I don't think there's anything I could say other than, whoa, mama.
Whoa, mama, ooga.
Whoa, mama, ooga.
Whoa, mama. Well, Bunkfunkers, whether you're listening to us in Taliesin,
yeah,
whether you're in California or whether you're in Massachusetts,
Massachusetts.
We hope you had a great time here on Andy and Art Debunked. And hey, I'm going to go to the bathroom and make my own falling water now. And falling stool. Thank you for joining us on the most highbrow podcast on earth.
The number one podcast banned in Europe.
Whoa, mama.
I'm Ken Harbaugh, host of Warriors in Their Own Words, a podcast that presents the unvarnished, unsanitized truth of what we have asked of those who defend this nation. As a country, we need these stories more than ever. Stories from Americans who have borne the battle, including 30-year-old remastered interviews with veterans from World War I recounting their time in the trenches of Europe, and with veterans from World War II, Korea, Vietnam, and from our most recent conflicts in Iraq, Afghanistan, and other battlefields Americans may never have heard of. Hear their stories by listening to Warriors in Their Own Words wherever you find podcasts.